today on Enduring Word with David Guzik, pastor of Calvary Chapel, Santa Barbara.
Solomon is setting us up for the end. Because in the end, he's going to ask us, I don't mean to blow the, I'm just going to tell you it now. We'll get to it, but let me just help you understand it in the here and now. That a wise life lives life in light of eternity. Not just in the here and now. No. But when we live life in the light of eternity, we're thinking about the future. Just like a man who sharpens the axe instead of just beating with a dull axe upon the wood.
We see all around us people whose philosophy of life is to live for today because this life is all there is. Seek riches or fame, live large, be as opulent as possible. Pastor David will be teaching about Solomon, who achieved all of those things and who wrote about them and their true value. We will see Solomon's view about wealth, popularity, and accomplishment in the book of Ecclesiastes and where his heart ended up. Please join Pastor David and listen to what he's saying today. Now, here's Pastor David with part one of his message, Folly and Wisdom.
The book of Ecclesiastes has a particular premise. And tonight, as we come to the last three chapters of the book of Ecclesiastes, it's helpful for me to remind you of the premise that we saw in the first nine chapters of the book. The premise of the book of Ecclesiastes, which makes it really kind of different than any other book of the Bible, is that it discusses this question from a fairly philosophical standpoint. The question is simply this: what meaning does this life have if this life is all there is? Now, there are many people who believe that this life is all there is, that there's nothing beyond what we live in, what we see, what we breathe in, what we experience in this life. And if that were true, that this life is all there is, then it would be fair to ask, what meaning does life have? Now, in the book of Ecclesiastes, Solomon, who calls himself the preacher of the book of Ecclesiastes, he uses a phrase repeatedly. As a matter of fact, he uses it 27 times in the book of Ecclesiastes. And the phrase is, under the sun. And in the mind of Solomon, that phrase, under the sun, considers life in this world. In other words, under the sun has the sense of this life in the here and now and not in consideration of eternity. Do you get the idea there? Now, up to this point in the book of Ecclesiastes, he's given us some wisdom, he's given us some foolishness, but all of it has come from this under the sun perspective. Now in chapter 10, Solomon inches forward more and more towards true wisdom, that is, living life in light of eternity. There is a sense in which in the previous nine chapters of the book of Ecclesiastes, we have been building up to this point that we're going to just make a bare step in chapter 10, but by the very end of the book, we're going to be immersed in true wisdom from an eternal perspective. So now let's take a look. Ecclesiastes chapter 10, verse 1. Dead flies putrefy the perfumer's ointment and cause it to give off a foul odor. So does a little folly to one respected for wisdom and honor. You see, Solomon here follows a familiar form in stating Proverbs. You understand that King Solomon was the author of the book of Proverbs. So here he's incorporating some of that thinking, some of that wisdom right here in verse 1 of Ecclesiastes chapter 10. And what's he have in mind? He has in mind the idea that a dead fly spoils the fine ointment because it just kind of rots in there and makes the whole thing trying to smell. And so he says, that is like how, look at there in verse 1, so does a little folly to one respected for wisdom and honor. Even as a small dead fly, which is quite little in proportion to the whole. I mean, the fly is so small and the ointment jar is so big, yet that one small fly can spoil the whole ointment. So a little bit of folly can spoil the reputation of someone who is regarded as wise and honorable. Friends, isn't it true? You can spend your whole life building up a reputation and one foolish act can take it away. One. It's almost unfair, isn't it? But it's true in the world that we live in. Now, I want you to understand something, that Solomon the preacher, now in the book of Ecclesiastes, he's beginning to direct his arguments toward the intended direction. If we want to use the metaphor of a ship, it's like he's operating this way. He has sailed in many different directions to show us the meaninglessness of life. He's been sailing all over the place, but now, beginning just in a little way in chapter 10, he's starting now to tack towards land, and he's putting the boat in the right direction. You see, Ecclesiastes chapter 10, verse 1 reminds us of a very important principle. Our actions have consequences, do they not? I mean, if you say that one act of foolishness can destroy the reputation you've spent your whole life trying to build, aren't we trying to say that actions have consequences? That lays the groundwork for what he's going to discuss later on. Now, verse 2. A wise man's heart is at his right hand, but a fool's heart is at his left. Even when a fool walks along the way, he lacks wisdom, and he shows everyone that he is a fool. Now, look at it there in verse 2. A wise man's heart is at his right hand, but a fool's heart is at his left. The right hand was regarded as the hand of strength and skill because most people are right-handed. The left hand was not regarded that way. Therefore, a wise man's heart is a strength and a help to him, just like your right hand is. But this is not true of the fool whose heart is at the left of him. You see, right and left were sort of symbols of strong and good on the one hand and weak and bad on the other hand. Matter of fact, did you know that the Latin word sinister means left? It kind of comes from this idea that the left side was not the good side. And what does he do? What's the result of it? Look at it there in verse 3. He shows everyone that he's a fool. The foolish man or woman has a way of making their folly evident. As Jesus would later say, he said this in Luke chapter 7, verse 25. He said, wisdom is justified by all her children. Wisdom and folly become obvious. Going on now, verse 4. If the spirit of the ruler rises against you, do not leave your post, for conciliation pacifies great offenses. There is an evil that I have seen under the sun. There's that phrase, under the sun. An error proceeding from the ruler. Folly is set in great dignity while the rich sit in a lowly place. I have seen servants on horses while princes walk on the ground like servants. Notice here, verse 4, he says, if the spirit of the ruler rises against you. The idea of this seems to be something like this. Even in a difficult situation, don't leave your post. Be faithful to your position and you will find that conciliation pacifies great offenses. But now in verses 6 and 7, he says, folly is set in dignity. And then verse 7, I have seen servants on horses. The preacher wanted to remind us of something. In this life, not everything is fair. Have you seen that? Have you seen some really foolish, wicked people rewarded? I have. Have you seen people who should be lowly and humble, yet somehow exalted to a high place? I've seen that as well. Friends, it's a terrible thing, but it shows us in this life, not everything is fair. He's setting us up for his conclusion to live life in light of eternity. Now, verse 8. He who digs a pit will fall into it, and whoever breaks through a wall will be bitten by a serpent. He who quarries stones may be hurt by them, and he who splits wood may be endangered by it. If the axe is dull and one does not sharpen the edge, then he must use more strength, but wisdom brings success. Again, he's continuing in his way of stating Proverbs, but he's saying in verse 8, he who digs a pit will fall into it. Solomon listed several examples of those who did wrong or foolish things, and then they suffered as a result of it. The guy who digs a pit and then falls into it. The guy who's quarrying stone, but then he's hurt by it. The guy who wants to split wood, but maybe the axe comes back up and hits him in the head or something like that. Again, the fool will continue on and use a dull axe, as he mentions in verse 10, instead of being wise and sharpening the edge. You see, listen, this is the point. The fool doesn't consider the future. The fool just says, axe, wood, chop. The wise man says, axe, sharper, work easier and safer. I don't know why I'm talking like a caveman, but you get the idea. You get the idea here, right? The wise man says, let me think about the future. I want you to understand, Solomon is setting us up for the end. Because in the end, he's going to ask us, I don't mean to blow the end, I'm just going to tell you it now. We'll get to it, but let me just help you understand it in the here and now. That a wise life lives life in light of eternity. Not just in the here and now. No. But when we live life in the light of eternity, we're thinking about the future. Just like a man who sharpens the axe instead of just beating with a dull axe upon the wood. Verse 11. A serpent may bite when it is not charmed. The babbler is no different. The words of a wise man's mouth are gracious, but the lips of a fool shall swallow him up. The words of his mouth begin with foolishness, and the end of his talk is raving madness. A fool also multiplies words. No one knows what he is to be. Who can tell him what will be after him? Now notice, again, he's talking about the consequences of foolishness. Again, verse 11, a serpent may bite when it's not charmed. The babbler is no different. As dangerous as a biting serpent is the one who talks or who babbles like a fool. In contrast, the words of a wise man are gracious. Now, verse 14, a fool also multiplies words. Who can tell him what will be after him? Now, listen, if we've been following the thought all throughout the book of Ecclesiastes, when we come to that verse, we say, who can tell him what will be after him? Solomon. What do you mean, what will be after him? All through the first 9 chapters, you told us to just think of life as being under the sun. You wanted us to think as if this life is all there is. And now you're telling me to consider that there may be something after me? What are you talking about, Solomon? He's going to keep going on now. Verse 15. The labor of fools wearies them, for they do not even know how to go to the city. The fool has no desire to work. And when they do, they quickly get tired. They can't see, this is what the fool can't see, that it is wise to work now to prepare for the future. Can I just give kind of a silly illustration? Here you are at the end of the pay period and you go to get your paycheck from the boss and you notice it's zero. Well, gee, boss, how come my paycheck's zero? Well, you didn't work any hours this week. Well, you know, gee, I was really counting on this money. I need to pay the rent and some bills, and I need to eat some food. Then the boss says, well, if you would have worked and put in some hours this week, then I would have some money in the paycheck to give you. But I want my paycheck. Where is it? The fool is so foolish, he doesn't think, I need to work now so that I can get paid on payday. He only lives for the moment and doesn't think about the future. Again, Solomon is telling us how to begin to have a mentality that prepares for eternity. I love what he says here in verse 15. They do not even know how to go into the city. The preacher continues to subtly back away from his previous under-the-sun premise. The fool has no sense of direction, no goal. He's so thick-headed, he doesn't even know how to go to the city. His life is lacking meaning and direction. Verse 16. Woe to you, O land, when your king is a child and your princes feast in the morning. Blessed are you, O land, when your king is the son of nobles and your princes feast at the proper time for strength and not for drunkenness. Because of laziness of the building decays and through idleness of hands the house leaks. A feast is made for laughter and wine makes merry, but money answers everything. Do not curse the king even in your thought. Do not curse the rich even in your bedroom. For the bird of the air may carry your voice and a bird in flight may tell the matter. Notice this. He's talking here in these verses about how foolishness corrupts a nation. So he says in verse 16, woe to you, O land, when your king is a child. Now Solomon felt that he himself was a child when he came to the throne of Israel, but he was a child who relied on the Lord. And then in verse 16, he says, woe to you, O land. And then verse 17, blessed are you, O land. The preacher understood that a land was blessed by good and faithful leaders, and a land was cursed by corrupt and foolish leaders. Let me just say that again. A land is blessed by wise and faithful leaders. A land is cursed by foolish and unfaithful leaders. It's the same today as it was then, is it not? Now, Solomon here in verse 19 speaks in the voice of this wicked, unwise king. So he says, a feast is made for laughter, wine makes merry, money answers everything. These are the words of a foolish king speaking. And along this line, he counseled his reader, verse 20, don't curse the king lest you be found out. Now, I want you to take a look at something there in the last verse, verse 19 of chapter 10. The thought is very suggestive. He says simply, for a bird of the air may carry your voice, and a bird in flight may tell the matter if you curse the king. You see, the thought is very suggestive. A king may hear of my wrongdoing, and I would suffer for it, even though I was not aware that he heard what I said. Okay, let me repeat that. A king may hear what I said and learn of it somehow, and I may suffer for it even though I was not aware that he was listening. Friends, don't you realize that it's the same with God? The same is true of my wrongdoing before God. My wrongdoing before God is wrong, and I may suffer for it even though I am unaware that God sees. You understand that, don't you? That it's not only when we're aware that God sees us that we are guilty before him. We're guilty before him every time we sin. And that's why we so desperately need to have our sin covered in the person and work of Jesus Christ. Ecclesiastes chapter 11, verse 1. Cast your bread upon the waters, for you will find it after many days. Give a serving to seven and also to eight, for you do not know what evil would be on the earth. What does he say there in verse 1? Well, cast your bread upon the waters. This probably refers to a shipping venture that required a lot of patience for the return of the investment. The idea is that a wise and good man works for a return that is not immediately seen. In other words, if you will only work for what you can immediately gain, you're a fool. The best and most important returns, both in business, but it's also true spiritually, are returns on investment where you invest for a long time wisely and then you receive. So he says in verse 2, give a serving to seven and then also to eight, for you do not know what evil will be on the earth. You see, he counseled generosity and did so in light of the future that it must be prepared for. Again, he's beginning to direct us more and more towards true wisdom. The ship is making its way back towards land. Verse 3, if the clouds are full of rain, they empty themselves upon the earth. And if a tree falls to the south or the north, in the place where the tree falls, there it shall lie. He observes the wind will never sow, and he who regards the clouds will not reap. Now notice this, verse 3, he says, if the clouds are full of rain, they may empty themselves upon the earth. In these Proverbs, Solomon is emphasizing the thought of cause and effect. And the principle alone directs us towards eternity. Think about it. The principle of cause and effect causes us to think towards eternity. Because we know this, that not everything is answered in this life. You see a very wicked man on this earth, whose wickedness is not punished on this earth. The law of cause and effect says there's a punishment coming. You see a very blessed man or woman on this earth whose blessedness is not rewarded on this earth. The law of cause and effect leads us to believe that there is a future blessing for them. And that's why he can say there in verse 4, he who observes the wind will not sow. In other words, the farmer who is overly analytical about the wind or about the clouds, he'll never plant his fields, and thus he will not reap. The preacher is gently pushing us away from an overly analytical view of life. Stop making it so complicated. Stop torturing yourself about this. It's simpler than you think. Verse 5. Or do you not know what is the way of the wind, or the bones grow in the womb of her who is with child? So you do not know the works of God who makes everything. Again, in verse 5, he is again reminding us of the limitations of human knowledge. You don't know the way of the wind, and you don't know how the bones grow in the womb of the mother. Isn't that a marvelous statement? Think about it. All the substance that begins in the womb of the mother, None of it is hard like bone is hard. Yet somehow bones form in the womb of the mother. How does that get there? Now, again, I know that there's scientific explanations and all that, but you have to see, just taking a distance from it in a very simple way, looking, you go, wow, how does that happen? It reminds us, verse 5, so you do not know the works of God who makes everything. In the same way that we do not know the hidden things, we also do not know the works of God in a complete or comprehensive way. The preacher is bringing us to a place of humility and submission to God and his works that, again, push us to a place that is away from that firmly entrenched under the sun premise. Verse 6. In the morning, sow your seed, and in the evening, do not withhold your hand, for you do not which will prosper, either this or that, whether alike, both will be good. In other words, using agricultural images, the preacher tells us to do the work of all kinds. Do your morning work, do your evening work. Why? Because you don't know which will prosper. Again, he pushes us towards an appropriately humble loss of self-confidence. We should give ourselves to all kinds of work because you don't know what will succeed. We know less of the future than we think we do. And this shakes us out of our confidence, saying, oh yeah, I know how it works. I was born in this world. I'm going to die in this world. And that's all there is. Oh, is it? Is there not more? You should not be so confident about your knowledge of the future. Verse 7, he kind of gives a final flirtation with the under the sun premise. Look at it here in verse 7 and 8. It's really interesting. It says, truly, the light is sweet, and it is pleasant for the eyes to behold the sun. But if a man lives many years and rejoices in them all, yet let him remember the days of darkness, for they will be many. All that is coming is vanity. Solomon is kind of going back and forth towards wisdom and foolishness. You see, after repeatedly arguing from the premise expressed by the phrase under the sun, the preacher now gives it a last glance. He's recognizing this thought before coming to his conclusions in chapter 12. That's why he says in verse 8, yet let him remember the days of darkness. The sun gives light, but the under the sun premise for both the preacher and for us will lead to days of darkness. And those days will be many, and it will show us that there is nothing but vanity on this earth. Ready for the last chapter? Thematically, we move to the last chapter at verse 9. If I were making the chapter divisions, I would start Ecclesiastes chapter 12 at verse 9 of chapter 11. So take a look at it with me now. Rejoice, O young man, in your youth, and let your heart cheer you in the days of your youth. Walk in the ways of your heart and in the sight of the sun, but know that for all these God will bring you into judgment. Therefore, remove sorrow from your heart and put away evil from your flesh, for childhood and youth are vanity. Now notice this, verse 9, rejoice, O young man, in your youth. You see, perhaps this argued that Solomon is now looking back from a position of old age to the days of his youth, before an under the sun premise began to take a toll on his life. Now friends, there's one of the great challenges of the book of Ecclesiastes is trying to connect the life of Solomon with the book of Ecclesiastes. When did he write it and under what circumstances did he write it? It is possible that he wrote this book as a jaded old man finding his way back to wisdom, and here he's remembering the wiser days of his youth.
We're so glad you joined us today on Enduring Word Radio. Pastor David's study through the book of Ecclesiastes continues to show us God's power and provision in the midst of the chaos of this world. We hope the words you heard today have touched you and encouraged you in your spiritual walk. We'd like to encourage you to visit our website at enduringword.com, where you'll find previous messages by Pastor David free to listen to or download. You can also subscribe to our Enduring Word Radio podcast. In this busy world, it's hard to set aside time to study the Bible in depth. We've tried to make that a little easier for you. By subscribing to our podcast, you'll have sound biblical teachings with you on the go, right on your smartphone, tablet, or computer. Find a link to our podcasts under the media tab at enduringword.com. Right now, we'd like to take a moment to tell you how you can be involved in this ministry. Programs like this are valuable ministry tools God uses to expand His kingdom here on earth, and we feel so blessed to be a part of that with Enduring Word. As with any ministry, though, there are significant costs involved. Would you prayerfully consider supporting the ministry of Enduring Word financially? You can find out more by visiting enduringword.com and clicking on donate. Thank you for taking this matter before the Lord. That's all the time we have for today. Be sure to tune in again as Pastor David presents more from the book of Ecclesiastes right here on Enduring Word.